All right, welcome to today's episode of the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN, and it's Wednesday, October 11th, 2017. And you may notice this is not a typical day in which we do episodes of this podcast during football season. And that is because we have an emergency topic to discuss, a topic that we discuss very frequently during the offseason. And I did not think we were going to need to discuss here in October, but unfortunately, here is where we are. And I'm joined by ESPN Nation's Nate Scott to discuss the incredible, remarkable events of last night when the U.S. national team, with I believe a 93% chance of qualifying for the World Cup per the ESPN Soccer Power Index, did in fact miss out on their first World Cup since 1986 by losing to Trinidad and Tobago. Nate, let me start with this. At what point in the game did you actually start believing, oh no, we're not going to qualify? Did it take until Panama actually took the lead, or were you like not seriously entertaining it up to that point?
At halftime, I started really entertaining it. The U.S. was down 2-0, and all the games were being played simultaneously, and I am a cynical man.
Sure.
And I thought, Costa Rica and Mexico right now are hearing in their meeting that in their halftime team talk that the United States, that they're through and that the United States is down 2-0 to Trinidad and Tobago. Mm-hmm. And that's when I started thinking, these guys have nothing to play for and their biggest rival in the region is trailing and could potentially miss out on the World Cup. And that's when I started getting very, very nervous.
To be fair, though, you at least got about a 45-minute head start of most of us. Given that
you were freaking out early.
No, I was freaking. I wasn't freaking out until Panama took the lead. That's when I was like, "Oh boy, wait, actually, really?"
Oh yeah, the other way. Got it.
Yeah, you at least had some time where you could kind of like prepare yourself for what was about to happen. I mean, it just seemed like okay, well, something will happen. I wasn't counting on the U.S. I was counting on Mexico or Costa Rica.
Oh, wow.
Even like as the announcers, and they were showing the graphic of eliminated, and they were showing the despondent U.S. team, and they cut to the Mexico game. I'm like, wait, can't Mexico score to make this to set things up? And I'm like, oh, that'll definitely happen. Mexico will help us out. And then they didn't help us out. And we were...
I did have that glimmer of hope when Mexico had the free kick.
It just seemed like it'd be a really good story.
Yeah, we got them in the last one. You'd think they'd think to return the favor, but nope.
It's a real shame. So let's talk about the match itself, and then we'll get to the bigger picture. It's hard to say now because we saw what happened after the fact, but when Bruce Arena decided to name the same starting 11 for the Trinidad match, were you surprised? Did you think it was a good idea? Did you think there was a possibility that what was going to happen in terms of how the U.S. lost this match playing out the way it did?
I didn't like a lot of what I'd been hearing. Mm-hmm. Everyone was focused on Pulisic going into the match, Christian Pulisic, the young star, and Arena did an interview where they asked about his fitness, and he basically said, listen, the field was so bad, we didn't get to train today, so I don't really know how he's feeling. I couldn't see him run full out. We couldn't really train. And when I heard that, I started getting anxious, because if you don't know what someone's fitness level, your best player, the guy you're building your whole team around, if you don't know what he's capable of, you have no idea about the other 10 guys in your starting lineup, because you're obviously going to be mostly focused on him. So when they said we're just going with the same lineup that led us to a 4-0 win against Panama, I was partially thinking like, okay, yeah, that's sort of what happens after you get a nice win. But my concern was Arena just did it because he didn't know anything else. He didn't have enough information. And so for him, it's, all right, well, they got us a big win. This is a weaker team. Let's just roll the dice with what we've got. So that made me a little nervous. The other thing that made me nervous about the lineup was, even in that Panama game, that 4-0 win, the attacking three of Pulisic, Josie Altidore, and Bobby Wood was incredible, mm-hmm. and kind of bailed us out. But Michael Bradley was essentially playing central midfield by himself, and often looked overrun. And the back pairing of Beasler and Omar Gonzalez, Matt Beasler and Omar Gonzalez, looked a bit shaky against Panama. And if Panama had any talent at all, or any more talent, they probably could have put a couple on the board. You know, that game probably should have been 4-2. Mm-hmm. And so I got a little nervous in a do-or-die game away from home three days after in 90-degree heat, and I'm there saying, are we really going to go open it up and try and go all out and attack, leaving Michael Bradley in the midfield on that shaky defense in a game that we just need to tie and get out of there? And unfortunately, that's exactly what came to bear.
Yeah, I mean, it did seem like from the first moment the U.S. were lethargic, but it also did seem like not only did they not have a ton of energy, but they really struggled to pass the ball around. I mean, they were losing possession so frequently at all different parts of the pitch, and it does seem like playing more than one midfielder would have been a reasonable way to approach the match. I'm not a soccer tactics expert, so I can't say. But and we saw that against Trinidad. And as much as we blame the field, I mean, you're the soccer player of the two of us. It does seem like, number one, these players have probably played on poor pitches before. And number two, I believe Trinidad also had to play on the same pitch, if I'm not mistaken.
It's a totally nonsensical excuse. This is CONCACAF. This is what these fields are. This is how you play. I think Arena might have thought, you know what, this game's just going to be dump and chase and the field's awful, so let's just put some forwards out, put some defenders out, and run around a bit and see what happens. But again, that's sort of ignoring the situation of the match. You're playing away from home. It's hot out. Mm-hmm. A 0-0 tie, and you're into the World Cup. And Bruce Arena was hired for one reason. Just get to the World Cup. There was nothing else he had to do. He did not have to think long term. Mm-hmm. He did not have to think about developing players. He didn't have to think about the program at whole. He was hired to do one thing, qualify for the World Cup. And if a 0-0 tie will have you qualify for the World Cup, playing a, you know, 4-1-2-3 or whatever they were doing with Michael Bradley stuck holding up in front of two center defenders who are fine, not mm-hmm. great, that would make me nervous on no matter what field. And you know, you can say the goals were fluky. You can say Tim Howard should have gotten to the second one. And, you know, the fact that we're still going with the same goalies this many years later is another question mark. Mm-hmm. But for me, it just, you know, there's a time to be expressive and free-flowing and go for it. And there's a time to just get a result. And this was the latter, and we didn't do that.
What do you think the lineup should have been? What do you think the formation should have been at the very least for this match, knowing that we needed a point basically to go through?
For me, I go with a 3-5-2/5-3-2. Mm-hmm. You put three center backs in. You've got Jeff Cameron on the bench, who's an integral player for a mid-table Premier League team. I mean, he's been maybe not integral this year, but I mean he's a good player, and when in form. You know, he had a couple bad games in this qualifying round, but for me, I still think he, along with John Brooks, who unfortunately was injured, is our best center back.
Sure.
And I'd plug him in there with either Beasler and Gonzalez. You've also got Tim Ream there, who's, you know, not a bad defender. You're a Ream believer in some regards.
I'm part of the Ream team.
You're part of the Ream team. There you go. And then bring the wing backs and, you know, plug in the center midfield with – bring in Kellen Acosta next to Bradley, get a little more defensive, put Pulisic on top of that and have the two strikers and say, you know what, we're going to defend like crazy. We'll take some chances when the wingbacks when we can. And if our top three can't get a goal, then you know what, we're going to protect at least. And instead we did this weird sort of middle thing where we didn't have a ton of defenders, but the midfield was spaced out and, you know, Darlington Nagby and Paul Areola were just sort of running around like chickens with their heads cut off, and there was nothing linking anything, and it fell apart.
It sure did. It really, really, really did.
I'm very worked up about this.
What are you? Are you telling yourself anything to make yourself feel better? Because I know what I'm doing is I'm making the internal argument of, well, given how bad we were in CONCACAF, even if, you know, Panama hadn't scored and we'd gone through to the playoff, we, number one, we probably would have lost to Australia, who have problems but are better than we are and certainly seem to travel better than we do. And and the other element is, let's say we even make it to the World Cup, it kind of feels like we would have just been stomped by most teams, given how badly we played during the qualifiers. So I don't think it would have been a great World Cup for us either. And I feel a little better thinking that, but I still would rather they have made it and lost than have not made it at all.
I'm with you. I mean, for me, the one bright, you know, silver lining for me is, all right, let's just do the thing. Let's tear it down. You know, let's bring in a coach who knows how to work young players, whether it be Tab Ramos or Oscar Pereja, who's done some great work with Dallas, even though they're having a rough season.
Right.
And, you know, bring in a guy who knows how to work with youngsters. And right now, say goodbye to everyone over the age of 31. Say, you know, thank you for your service. You've been great.
This really hurts my chances of making the national team, so that's a little upsetting.
Mine too, man.
That's fair.
Really, you know, I'm still holding out hope. But for me, and at that point, it's give the team to the youngsters. You know, Christian, we're building around you. We're going to build a group of young players who are between the ages of 19 and 26, and this is going to be our team. And even if they're, you know, we might bring in a couple older guys if they're having a nice run of form or want to compliment or, you know, be a leader on the team, we can keep Michael Bradley around. But otherwise, get this group together, get them comfortable playing with each other. And, you know, we've got Cutter in 2022 or whatever it is. And let's just build to that.
Let's go through some players, actually. This is what I wanted to do. Let's go through some players, and I want your opinion on if you think they should or will have a future with the national team. I'll start with one.
Do it.
Chris Wondolowski.
Wando, thank you for your service, but no mas.
Do you think it would have been worse if he had actually come on, like for the final couple minutes of the match, as he'd supposedly been warming up for that purpose?
Part of me, for like a poetry perspective, really wanted him on the field. Just if he had put that goal away, it would have been like everything would have been undone, and we could just let him go. But I also think if he came in at the end and missed a sitter, I think they might have had to disband the United States national team. Like, I think that would have been it. I think the fans would have just that way. Like, the risk reward is too high there, because if he missed an easy one in the 93rd minute. That would have qualified us for the World Cup. I honestly think that would have been it. Like, I think people would just be wandering the wilderness at that point.
Is he our Fred? Is that the closest comparison?
Maybe? Yeah, I guess so. I mean, how long did Fred last in the National? He was there till late 30s, right?
He was there for 40? A decade, till 39 years old. He's 39 matches. He was 34. He got his final cap at 31.
And okay.
Wando's 30.
He just looks so old.
His name is Fred.
And his name's Fred. That's really what it is.
If his name was like Liam, I'd be like, okay, well, he's probably 22 years old. But Fred's just an old name at this point.
Fred's an old name. And he never really did anything, just sort of getting the six and put his head on stuff, which is a skill.
That's something. So yeah, I think Wanda's done. Tim Howard and Brad Guzan, would you bring either of them back for another qualifying cycle?
No, and this has been something that has driven me insane for a long time. They haven't been willing to bring in young goalkeepers, and when you don't bring them in, they don't get caps, and then you say, well, they haven't gotten any caps, so they're not ready for the big moment, and that's how you end up with Tim Howard, Brad Guzan, and Nick Raimondo as our goalkeepers in this thing. None of them in great form. And we've got a group of young goalkeepers. You know, Bill Hamid's the obvious one, but, you know, there are good young goalkeepers in this country and playing abroad in Europe who are ready and have been waiting for their chance. And, you know, if there's one thing that comes out of this, I hope they just rip the Band-Aid off and say, you know, guys, thanks, and we're going to start getting these guys caps now and get them ready for, you know, real games in 6 years. 4 years.
Who do you think gets the most caps at keeper for the U.S. during the next qualifying cycle?
Unfortunately, I think it'll be Guzan.
Really?
I really do.
Oh God. I want to say Ethan Horvath. I think that would be the dream.
Yeah, I mean, for me, that's what I'm interested in. You know, I think Horvath's a great choice. I'm in DC. I've interviewed Bill Hamid a lot. I think he's great. I think Jesse Gonzalez, this kid for FC Dallas. Sorry. He declared for. He isn't cap tied to Mexico. Anyway, that is another choice as well. There are guys. There are players, and
we won't know if they're any good until we actually try them.
We have no idea. That's the thing. You know, they play in MLS. Hamid's a great shot stopper. Mm-hmm. Horvath's great at that as well. You know, the knock on them for this whole time has been decision making and leadership and distribution and stuff like that. And it's like, well, get them in there. Let's see. You know, leadership. How can we possibly know?
Right.
Unless they're the guys. And you know, in sort of this country's history, we've seen, you know, 94 is the famous example, but if you get a group of guys together and get them together playing a lot together, and small countries have shown how you can do this, you know, good things happen. National teams are hard to put together because you don't have a lot of time, and they come together quickly, and if they gel or they don't. But if you can play a group of young people together a lot for a long time, you know, sometimes they can overachieve.
The non-DeAndre Yedlin defenders in this 23-man roster: Omar Gonzalez, DeMarcus Beasley, Tim Ream, Jorge Villafania, Graham Zusi, Jeff Cameron, are any of them meaningful members of the next U.S. national team cycle, qualifying cycle?
Cameron will be.
Even though he's 32.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Jeez. I mean, he's so versatile that I think he's one of those guys they might just keep around because you can play him in center mid, you can play him in center back, and play him in outside back. And from a roster standpoint, he just solves problems.
Sure.
So I could see him kind of becoming DeMarcus 2.0, is just a guy you sort of keep around forever, just DeMarcus Beasley 2.0. I think Villafania has sort of answered a question for us at outside back in a position that they haven't had for a while. He's 28. I know he'll be sort of tailing off, but that's someone I still see as being a part of the discussion moving forward. And then really it's Brooks and Yedlin. And after that, I don't think anyone's safe.
I think that's fair. In the midfield, someone who has been very controversial for a number of years, what is Michael Bradley's future with this national team?
He's the one I think you keep. I'm a Bradley defender. Mm-hmm. He's what, 30? 31?
30 with 140 caps to his name.
30 and 140 caps. I do think there needs to be, you know, for years, the team sort of revolved around, you know, the goalies as kind of the elder statesman leaders on the team.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's done. That time is over. And I think if you're looking for one person to sort of transition this team to the next and being there and teach these guys how to, you know, how it works at a national camp, and, you know, it's also just like how to be a captain for this team and how to navigate the bog of, you know, American soccer fandom and blah, blah, blah. I think blah, blah, blah. Yeah, there's a lot there. But I do think that Bradley's someone that they'll keep around, if only, you know, as a guy to sort of usher in the new era. I don't know if he'll be there in Qatar. I would be surprised if he had moved on at that point. But I do think they will keep him around.
Do you think he will be the captain of the team during the next qualifying campaign?
No, I think they'll hand the. I think sometime in 2019, 2020, they hand it to Pulisic.
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
I mean, he's. It's his team. It's already his team, and. That happened in like 2 months. He took the 10 jersey and they basically built the team around him, and players started deferring to him, and he's young, he's a baby, anything can happen, but right now at least he seems to have the personality for it and he seems to want it. Mm-hmm. Which is not something that everyone is comfortable in, and that might change as it grows, but he seems like someone who wants this. And so I think sometime in the next qualifying cycle that will be handed off to him.
One more player for you, Jozy Altidore.
Jozy's part of it going forward.
Does that excite
Jozy's
you?
Great.
He's great.
Jozy's great. Jozy is so underappreciated. He's not someone who's going to dazzle with individual brilliance, but if you need someone who is strong and wonderful and can hold up play and can link a pass, Altidore is successful when every single time he's been successful as a pro, he's had someone who is coming from a deep midfield position running off of him. For a while, that was Clint Dempsey at the national team level. In Toronto, it's been Giovinco. Now that's been handed off to Christian Pulisic. Mm-hmm. And when Jozy has that player, someone who will, you can play, lump the ball into Jozy, he will hold the ball up, and then he can lay it off for you running at him. Mm-hmm. He's extremely effective, and I think better at it than Bobby Wood, who tendency is to want to take the ball and go, which is, that's a good tendency. He wants to get in behind. He wants to get to goal. But Altidore likes playing with his back to goal, and he likes holding the ball up. It's almost like a pick and roll man, he kind of just wants to distribute out of that position. Mm-hmm. And when he has a good player who can run off of him, as he will now for years with Christian Pulisic, I think he's going to be really, really effective. And I think he's wildly underappreciated.
I don't know that I agree.
You don't like Jozy?
They're just like, how many times do you watch the U.S. team play, and like 60 minutes in, you're like, wait, is Jozy even out there? Like, is he even playing today?
You gotta look off the ball, man. Gotta look off the ball. He does good things. He does good things. I really, he's unfortunately a player who's going to play as well as those around him. He's not going to go and get the ball and make something happen. He's got to be running off the ball into space. He's got to get good service in from an outside back or an outside midfielder, and then he's got to have someone running creatively off of him. I mean, he's a linking player, and as a linking player, you're only as good as the player's linking off you. He's very rarely going to do something himself with the ball, but that's, I think, a lot of the reason why managers like him is because he doesn't try and do more than he's capable of doing. Mm.
Fine. I'll allow it. You're the expert here. I will defer to you, but...
Who do you want to... Do you want to bring in the young redhead, Josh Sargent, and just let him run around?
Dude, I just want to see Weston McKennie and Pulisic just play together. It could just be 2-on-11 for all I care.
Yep. McKennie's exciting.
I want anyone who is 23 and younger playing in Europe to be the U.S. national team from this point forward for the next 4 years.
Yeah, and honestly, I other than literally other than Brooks, well, Brooks is 24. I mean, other than maybe Cameron, Bradley, and Jozy, I agree with you.
Thank you.
Just give it to them. Give it to the kids. Let's do it. Let's just do the thing. And we're gonna have some ugly losses, and people are gonna have to be a little bit patient. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be a weird thing in the lead up to the World Cup where I think the United States will be viewed as one of the better teams that did not qualify. Yeah. And so I think a lot of teams are going to be trying to schedule friendlies with us in the run up to the World Cup as sort of like a, let's try out some lineups and see what we've got. Mm-hmm. And I think there will be an unfortunate instinct by maybe U.S. soccer to try and represent well and give fans hope and put out the best team that we've got as of right now, and give Clint some more appearances and stuff like that. But for me, it's like, yo, just blow it up. Let's go. Let's, you know, bring in Weston McKennie, bring in Emerson Hyman, bring in the kids, see who can handle it.
Bring in the Gooch.
Bring in Gooch. Bring in Lyndon Gooch. Bring in Eric Palmer Brown. Bring in Andrew Carlton. Bring in all these kids. Bring in Jonathan Gonzalez and Tyler Adams and everyone, and let's see what we got, you know. And Pulisic, everyone knew he was good. They didn't think he would be this good for the country till they plugged him in there, and he became America's best player. So let's see what we've got.
All right. Last question for you, Nate Scott. Who are you rooting for now? I'm assuming that the U.S. is not going to make it in the 2018 World Cup.
I've turned on Iceland. I'm no longer an Iceland fan.
They're too trendy.
They're too trendy. Thank you for being with me on this. Every single person after the U.S. lost, like, oh, Iceland. They do the little chant. I understand it's a very charming country and cheap to fly to, so a lot of people our age go and visit and take nice Instagram pictures.
Yeah.
And I have no interest in that. I'm still I have been following this crop of Belgian players for 8 years now. Maybe even more than that, maybe 10 years. About a decade ago, those of the nerdiest of the soccer nerds saw this youth generation of young Belgian players, and led by Vincent Kompany and Fellaini before he became a punchline, and Moussa Dembele, and then into Eden Hazard. And for me, that team just kind of came out of nowhere, and it was just such an exciting young generation of players. And I know they knocked the United States out of the World Cup, but that's a team that I want, like, Italy or Spain or Germany just wins every, or Brazil wins every freaking time, and enough. I'd like Belgium to win a World Cup, and I think this is this group of players' sort of real last chance to do it, and so I hope they do it.
Again,
who are you rooting for?
It's too trendy. Too trendy. I'm
Belgium's too trendy.
I was
day one. I was seeing them in the indie theater when no one was there. It was me and four other nerds on Twitter.
It was you and Mark Wilmots just hanging out.
Exactly. Me and Mark just checking out, liking the bassist. You know, no one was there drinking PBRs. We were the original Belgium hipsters.
Yeah, but it's too crowded now. Too many players. Everyone knows. I'm still debating. Mina Kimes offered me an official invitation onto the South Korean bandwagon. That does sound
pretty
tempting.
There you go. That's nice.
I feel like that is a fun team to root for. I know maybe three players on the team. Maybe. I'm thinking.
Yeah.
But I'm in. I feel like that's a really solid place for me to start. Happy to root for Son. I feel like he's a really fun player to root for. Ki-sung Young, I know from Celtic. Early indications are I will go for South Korea, but I'm willing to be wooed. I may do a column of that nature at some point in the future.
See, I just latched onto the Belgians, and you're thinking about content, about interaction with your fans. That's smart. You're better at this than me. That's good.
I don't think that is true, Nate Scott, but you are a wonderful guest on the Bill Barnwell Show. Thank you for coming on. Where can people check out more of what you do on a day-to-day basis?
Check out the SB Nation soccer page if you like what I'm talking about. I don't get to write enough. I'm editing mostly these days, but we've got some great stuff up today on 11 players to look forward to and potential coaching challenges. I make fun of Bruce Arena, and there's all sorts of good stuff. So sbnation.com/soccer, and you'll find all that good stuff.
Nate, thank you so much for coming on an emergency basis for this podcast. You are one of the foremost soccer experts on the planet, so I appreciate you taking the time out to hop on.
I don't know about that, but thank you very much.
All right, guys, thanks so much for checking out this emergency episode of the Bill Barnwell Show today. We're going to come back tomorrow. We're going to preview week 6 of the NFL season, back to football, but I felt like we had to talk about the U.S. national team because it was all I could think about this morning, I have to admit. But thanks so much for indulging this soccer episode, and if you liked it, keep checking out more episodes of the Bill Barnwell Show. A lot of football these days, but other stuff will be coming back as the season wears on, as we get towards the off season, which is coming sooner than you think. So more Bill Barnwell Show coming later on this week and every week after for the rest of my life. Thanks.